Welcome or welcome back to the ALFI Next Gen Finance Podcast, where we discuss trends in the Luxembourg fund industry. In this episode, we'll explore a topic that impacts pretty much all of us, how to retire in a smart way and why it's important to plan for your future comfort now. I'm your host, Natalie Gerhardstein, and I'm joined today by Jaime Barragan, a senior investment advisor at BGL BNP Paribas. Welcome.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me today. It's a pleasure being here.
Just to start off, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and the work you're doing?
Absolutely. So I am both Spanish and Luxembourgish. I grew up in Luxembourg and studied abroad in Spain, France, and London. Co-started an advisory firm right after my master's in Spain, where I worked for around 3 years, after which I decided to come back to Luxembourg. The tough part of that was convincing my now wife to come to Luxembourg, but now she's absolutely delighted to be here. And time flies because it's been almost 6 years, most of which I professionally spent in BNP Paribas helping clients manage their multi-asset class portfolios.
So before we jump right in and talk about guaranteeing the best retirement, let's go just over some of the basics. What's money? What's investing? What's inflation?
Well, I really feel like we could spend the whole podcast just talking about this question. About money, let's just see maybe its functions. It acts primarily as three items. Medium of exchange, with the characteristic that it must be globally accepted, a unit of account, and a store of value, right? And if you see the story of money, first of all, it was coins, even before Romans and the denarians, then it evolves into paper. And as a curious fact, the British pound sterling stands as the oldest currency still in legal tender today. It dates back from the 8th century. And it initially represented that, a pound's weight in silver. So the way we evolved into notes is quite simple. Instead of carrying the gold and the silver around, which was heavy, cumbersome, and carried further risk, an institution would safeguard that gold or silver and give you a piece of paper or note that said, that guaranteed that if you went to that institution with that piece of paper, they would give you that amount of gold and silver. And that's really how banks were born. Now, today, obviously, banks do a wider range of activities. There's a concept of central banks. In fact, for Western economies, you cannot convert your money into gold or silver anymore. Now we have what we call the fiat money that comes from Latin and means trust. And in fact, when changing that, for example, in the early 70s with President Nixon in the US, this was one of the factors that created inflation. And to answer your question about inflation, it is a sustained increase in the general price level of goods and services in an economy over time, often referred or often evaluated from as a basket of goods such as milk, butter, meat, etc. And what it does ultimately is erode purchasing power. In the Eurozone, for example, in the last 25 years, so far this century, we have had around 70 to 75% of inflation, which means that what you could buy in 2,400, today you got to pay for this same amount of goods, 175. And this is one of the items that has pushed people towards investing, right? To try to increase the money that they have, at least to not lose the purchasing power. And then from there, you can go to riskier investments, right? And I like to see investing as more from a philosophical perspective, as a way of delaying gratification. You have monies today, you could spend it and have instant gratification. You just put it on the side somewhere with the hope of having more money down the road, right? And ultimately, it is what it is. If cash is kept in the bank with no interest or no return, throughout a long period of time, inflation eats out one's purchasing power. And that's one of the reasons many people are pushed towards investing.
So what are the mechanics of Luxembourg's pension system today? And how would you say that that system compares or contrasts with those of other European countries?
Well, I guess we're focusing here on the public pensions, I understand. And it's the pension that the state promises to pay us as we contributed through our life. In Luxembourg, they're called the solidarity pensions, also known as pay-as-you-go pensions. And how do they work? It's basically current workers that are paying for current retirees with the promise and or the hope that when their time comes, well, they will be retired and you would have people paying for their pension. There is a Financial Times article that was recently published around 3 weeks ago that tackled this point, saying whether or asking whether Europe could still afford its current state pensions. In fact, they were slightly more straightforward and mentioned, they described it as generous state pensions, right? And to some extent, the concern is legitimate. There's no formal contract in place that gives you a guarantee that the state is going to pay the pension later. What if the government unilaterally changes the conditions, as for example, it has been happening in countries like France or Spain, where they delay the age of pension, right? But on more of a positive note, in Luxembourg, it remains relatively stable, at least compared to many European peers. You have positive items such as migration that sustains well the system. You have technology as well, in which, like many other European countries, or in fact broadly, you have an AI boom, also partly because of the hope of increasing productivity in the workers. It's expected that certain European countries by 2050 will have 1.5 workers per pensioner. And obviously technology can play a huge part. And let's not forget that Europe, demographically, is the oldest continent in the world. The median age of population is above 40 years, which means that you have more people that are 40 years that are below 40 years. From a financial standpoint, Luxembourg is quite solvent, with a substantial low debt to GDP and a good reserve fund of around 30 for pensions. It's around 30 to 35% as of a couple of years ago. It's good news, but obviously it also means that in the future, and it's easier now to make certain shifts towards a more sustainable sort of pension scheme throughout in the next 20, 30, 40 or 50 years. But obviously these changes can be sometimes politically costly, particularly in a country where it is estimated that only 1 in 4, private sector workers can actually vote. And a big part of the voters, or a big chunk of it, is are retirees. That happens not only in Luxembourg, but all other European countries. But here, maybe the approach you have is sort of baby steps, encourage sort of fiscal initiatives towards private pension plans, towards life insurances, etc., etc. I mean, this is a challenging topic with many political implications. However, and my key takeaway of this one is that we as workers should take the future in our own hands and prepare for it.
And I think that segues nicely into our next question. I'd like to hear your thoughts on what age most do or perhaps should start the retirement planning. For instance, would starting in your 20s or 30s make a big difference?
Well, to answer that question, the most important topic here is compounding. What is compounding exactly? So let's say you start with 100. After 1 year, you have 105, so a 5% return. It's this idea that for the next year, not only are you going to put this 100, this initial 100, but you're also going to put this 5 that yielded you already. And it's going to create this sort of virtuous snowball effect that, with the help of time, has proven to be quite efficient. And I actually did the numbers because I suspected this question. And just with a numerical example, I think is pretty self-explanatory. Let's say that every month you put 200 euros aside, and per year you have a 7% annual rate. If you start at 45 years of age, when you'll be 65 by putting 200 euros on the side, you will end up with 104,000 euros in roughly 20 years. If you start at 35 years of age, so for a 30 years period, when you'll be 65, putting these 200 euros aside, you'll have 244,000 euros. And if you start at 25 years of age, a 40-year period, when you'll be 65, you'll have over 500,000. You have 525,000. So as a conclusion, I think the numbers speak for themselves. The sooner you start, the better you're likely going to be.
Indeed, and I think it helps when you put it in very concrete numbers. And when you say 500,000, I think that's something people could understand differently. Is there a general rule in terms of how much people should aim to save each month as a percentage maybe of their net income? And how can individuals sort of balance their retirement savings with other early life goals, such as buying a home?
Well, the traditional 40% housing, 40% living, and 20% for saving / investing is a really good rule of thumb, I would say. But as a person that works in finance, I would say that a 40% housing, 30% living, and 30% for investing is even better. Everything is about balance, right? You shouldn't have too much of a carpe diem situation where you completely, you spend all your money and completely disregard the future. But you shouldn't probably either just think about the future and literally try to spend as little as possible, because you don't bring the money to your graveyard. Like many things in life, balance is key, right? And you asked about buying a home. That's a long-term investment. And it sort of, well, bounces back to this 40% that you would spend on housing. With a mortgage, you're gonna be paying every month for 25, 30, and 35 years. But what likely when you'll retire, you will not have to take care of those payments anymore. So it takes a bit of weight out of that sort of financial pressure that you could have once you retire. Also, think of it this way. A home is a hard asset. And by the way, one that covers a basic need, which is sheltering. If you invest into shares, into ETFs, bonds, or even bars of gold, you cannot eat bars of gold. They cannot shelter you, whereas a house can. So all in all, it could be a good idea. But obviously, buying at a good price is important, particularly in the current rate context. And you will tell me, yes, but Jaime, banks will usually require initial capital. And honestly, I would encourage people that think of buying a house to go see a bank, see what type of home they want to have, what type of budget they need, and how much they would need in terms of initial capital, because that's only going to help them to have a goal to of how much they need to save is only going to help them to be able to have this discipline of saving towards that goal.
Mm-hmm. That's very practical advice. Let's talk about the concept of retirement number. How would one calculate how much they'd need to maybe that they would need based on their own lifestyle goals, like travel maybe or family support?
Well, that's an excellent question. There is no universal answer as such. It really depends on the lifestyle you would like to have, right? Let me turn the question around. How much are your costs going to be? And you should adjust inflation to it as well, right? And this is a concept that was born in the US and is called an endowment. And it's with an initial amount of money, how much would you need to finance, well, a project throughout time, or your cost of living, right? So let's say that you have around, let's say 10 million to summarize, right? Or to give an example. And these 10 million give you a sustained 6%. Well, half of it, well, let's say 2.5 is going to be inflation and half of it is going to be costs. So you end up having 3%. And this 3% of 10 million is 300,000 euros. Well, probably enough for most of us, right? Well, maybe you need a little bit less then. But let's not forget that markets can be, or in any investments can be volatile. And even you're not going to have 6% every year. So it is also encouraging to keep a steady stream of income.
Okay, great, thank you. What are some of the biggest personal finance mistakes young savers make?
Well, I'd say the first one is living above the means. So, and that actually is quite a recurring topic in the US, where there is quite a lot of credit card sort of debt. You would buy a car with a loan. You wouldn't go on holiday with a loan. And I think that here you need some budgeting. You need to have also a realistic expectation and realistic approach of what your situation is. And by living, well, certainly within your means, I think it already is a big step. Second one, obviously, is having an emergency fund. I think is also quite important. Another point that is also very relevant, and that is often, I see that as often as a sort of personal finance mistake, is lifestyle inflation. And it's the concept of hiking expenses as you have salary increases or further money coming in. So let's say you have a bonus or you have a promotion and you have, for example, an extra 5, 10, 15,000 euros per year. You should have a certain discipline to allocate this extra money evenly towards your different goals. You shouldn't just splurge it on something, or at least I wouldn't say it is the right approach. And for that, I'll use an example that of someone I've met around 5-7 years ago. And that person was earning between 20 and 30,000 euros net per month. And he genuinely told me that he was concerned because he had trouble going all the way to the end of the month, despite his huge salary. And why was that? Was because he hiked his expenses, his lifestyle. He flew business. He was out every time, constantly traveling, buying whatever he felt like. And obviously, You need to keep your hairs on your shoulders in that sense, and try to budget and have this discipline of following through with the plan that you have in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Another point that might be also a personal finance mistake is avoiding risk at all costs. But there it's quite important to have an understanding of volatility and long-term expected returns, particularly if the lifespan or sort of investment horizon is more towards the 15, 20, 25 plus years. I will give an example of the MSCI World, which is an equity index that basically encompasses companies from the US, Europe, and Japan mainly. If you take their returns from 10 years and 25 years in euro terms, in 10 years, you're doing 12.5% annualized returns, which is double digits and is quite good. Obviously, the three last years of the stock markets have been quite helpful. However, if you see the 25 years, it has been 6.3% annualized return. And if you had invested on the last day of 1999, it would have, in this index, it would have taken you up to 12 years to recover. And markets can be tricky. So I think there's a few considerations there, right? The first one is that what has worked in the past in terms of strategy and in terms of performance does not mean that it's going to work in the future. Another one is that I always say it's quite important to understand what is done, where you're invested, and the risk that it carries. And maybe as a third point, I'd say that it might be good to be accompanied by professionals in this investment journey. Retail investors or people that maybe do not have an extended knowledge can fall into traps quite easily, or they may act on emotions and cognitive biases. And at the end of the day, investing is not gambling. Another item I would consider as a sort of personal finance mistake is completely neglecting diversification. It has been proven that it reduces volatility without necessarily sacrificing returns. We're now discussing about the possibility of owning a home, you own real estate, and that's already diversifying maybe from another portfolio you may have, whether it's stocks, funds, ETFs, you can also have bonds, you can also think of commodities or precious metals. And generally, it has proven to be quite efficient into avoiding big drops and big volatility. Taxes are also quite relevant, right? And in a country as Luxembourg, where you can have certain advantages, such as if you're a resident and you hold for a certain period of time, you might be exempt of capital gains. You can have also fiscally deductible pension plans or life insurances. Those are the little things that one should consider, because they can be quite impactful on a sort of long horizon journey of investing. And lastly, I would say a sort of personal finance mistake is, maybe we should add financial education, both from a private initiative, but also from a public. However, I must say that I think the government is already doing a few steps towards it, and among which I believe Alfie is also an initiator of these. So that's quite good.
I think you're right. Yeah, thank you. You've given us so many good key messages, but are there any maybe specific takeaways you'd like to leave with the audience today?
The first one is the ownership of your future. Even if the government is there, I think one should take initiatives to ensure or to at least partially provide towards your retirement plan. The second one is starting soon, because time will do the rest. Or the third sort of key takeaway would be balance between today and the future, and when you set up a plan, trying to stick to it. And the fourth one, and this is probably the keyword of today's podcast, is discipline, right? Investment or sort of long-term investment is a journey. For that, obviously, we do not need to go from 0 to 100. We mentioned this possibility of putting 200 euros aside. Maybe it cannot be 200, it can be 50 euros aside. We can already see the impact it can have, right? So these baby steps with discipline, because in this world of investments, let's not forget that Rome was not built in one day.
So don't be discouraged, yeah. Thanks, it's all great words of advice, and I think I appreciate, and I think our listeners would appreciate as well, the concrete examples you've provided today in real terms. Thank you, of course, to all our listeners as well. Don't forget to check out the other episodes on the Alfie website at alfie.lu and on paperjam.lu, plus all the usual podcast sites such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. Alfie Next Gen Finance, connecting today's talent with tomorrow's investment fund leaders.